Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. There's all kinds of family. We chose this one. This is episode 349, Fast and Furious, lap 14. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too. And this episode's brought to you by Alan Wake 2, Monsters Wear Many Faces. Alan Wake 2 is out now on PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series X. Shout out to Alan Wake 2.
Well, shout out to Alan Wake 2, and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. Before I introduce our guest, Joe, this is the weirdest coincidence I think we've ever had on the show. This movie we're talking about tonight came out 15 years ago today, on the day we're recording.
Oh, I didn't know that.
April 3rd, 2009, 15 years ago.
April release for a Fast and Furious movie feels weird.
A lot of them are. I mean, I think that's the...
It's like May. It always feels like May.
Furious 7 was, I think. Hmm. Who knows?
Okay. April 3rd is early in the movie season, though.
F9 was supposed to. April 3rd is early. You are correct about that. But with us tonight, once again, all lab long, we have with us tonight Kim Basine and Walt Hickey. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome back to the show.
How's it going?
What's up?
How are you two doing tonight?
Delighted. This is great. This was a breath of fresh air. This was a terrific film. And we're hitting a stride, you know?
Good.
We are also talking tonight about Los Bandoleros. So remind our listeners, how many times have you seen Fast and Furious 2009? A lot? Once, a handful of times, and I think the answer is no, but had either of you seen Lo Bandolero before tonight, or today, or this week, or whenever?
I have seen The Fast and the Furious, or rather Fast and Furious.
Thank you.
This is comfortably my fourth time.
Maybe
on cable in the background a couple times, but like comfortably I've seen this film. This is my fourth viewing.
Wait, do these movies play on cable? I've never noticed before. Are they always on TNT?
I feel like it's only been a handful of times for me. This is definitely the one that I've seen the fewest number of times.
Okay. And had either of you seen the short film written and directed by Mr. Vin Diesel before?
Did not know this film existed.
Nope.
So let's start there. What did you guys think of the 20-minute Los Bandoleros?
Interesting choices were made by both director and actor Vin Diesel.
Oh, okay.
Interesting choices.
Good, interesting, or bad interesting?
Yeah, I would say that this film is interesting because it is very much like a tone poem. Like it stuff doesn't really happen a ton in there, and that's
nope.
Okay. Reminds you of some dudes that occurred. It like has, you know, people having macho conversations in bars with one another. I would like to hear from you guys how this thing happened, because I have theories, but I need to know why did Vin Diesel get to direct a 20-minute short film ahead of the release of the blockbuster motion picture directed by Justin Lin, Fast and Furious.
So I don't remember. We looked this up when we watched it for the first time. I think the thinking was Tokyo Drift. So we're covering Tokyo Drift later in the lab. Tokyo Drift comes out, Han dies. They're marketing Fast and Furious Han back. And people are like, wait, hold on, what? And so I think this was made to kind of link the two, because Fast and Furious the full film does not ever establish it is a prequel. You just have to use your brain to be like, I guess this happened before. So this was, I think, showing how Han knew, or like why Han is there in the beginning of this movie, and sort of connective tissue or canonical glue from where we were to where we're going.
Also, Vin, the auteur, obviously had this thought in his head, you know, gasoline is life. If we're not moving, we're dying. Mm-hmm. So I think that he just needed a creative outlet to get this out.
Now, what makes no sense is this did not release until the Blu-ray release of Fast and Furious number 4. So even though this is a prequel to the movie that we are talking about tonight.
That is a prequel.
That they are talking about the heist. The heist they're talking about in Los Bandoleros is the heist that they do at the beginning of this movie. No one saw it until after they saw the movie, which is wild.
This makes sense to me because I don't think I've ever seen any piece of media so contractually obligated as part of the terms of developing the Riddick franchise as this particular show. This really screams like, you know, he did want to get his shot at directing and probably writing Fast and Furious, and they were like, I don't know about that one. I think that we'll give you a 20-minute, this budget, that kind of stuff. Stamp your name on the franchise, see how we go. Because Kim, you had, I think, a slightly different reaction to this film.
No, I have a thought. I think the tone here might be overly negative.
No, of course. Let's bring it back up.
Something about it is extremely atmospheric.
Right.
So that. It feels perhaps in a movie like, say, Dune, that could have been accomplished with like literally one shot. And you're like, oh, okay, I understand where I am.
Yeah.
In Vin's case, he decided to take 20 minutes to show us what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, the first 10 minutes or so, where they're just kind of, you know, looks, you see these little vignettes of life in this place. Like that was kind of cool.
It was cool.
Yeah, there's like 8 minutes before we see anybody that we recognize, basically, right? Like it just, or at least until Vin shows up.
I think that genuinely Michelle Rodriguez might have more screen time in this film than she has in Fast and Furious.
Well, we have often referred to this as the best Letty. Like, this is the most she's ever given to do. This is the most agency she ever has. This is also, we will get to way later in Furious 7, we don't see it here, but this is when they get married. Like, this is their honeymoon.
And off screen, but like that's like there's just so much that could have been on the screen.
It gets onto the screen eventually.
Okay. Anyway,
this watching Los Bandoleros this time made me really wonder what the fuck these movies would have been if they would have let Vin write, direct, and act.
Full on, right? Like, this is Vin's thing. It let him do every single bit.
He might actually have believed that Fast and Furious movies should be up for Oscars. If this is what he made, you know, for like 20 minutes, if you gave him $250 million in 2 hours, he would be like, I can make an Oscar
give
movie.
Me double the money and double the time.
Yeah.
Would you like to see more of these? Because I sure would.
Yeah.
Like that. in the same vein as, like, you know how Disney releases shorts? Not the individual short, but the franchise-linked shorts.
Yes. So it's the like, Marvel one shots and stuff. Yeah.
It's like Olaf's Winter Wonderland. Like that. Can we get that with a different
you want like
every movie he should get 1 20-minute vignette beforehand and it's just like tonally way different.
You just gotta get like Peacock on the phone because they might do it.
Keep in mind you're asking two guys whose idea it was to watch these movies over and over again forever. Do you want more of these? The answer is yes.
We want always more of
these. Yes. Or
I think there's something very fun about just being like a 20-minute thing that like kind of ties into the movie, but not, I mean, it directly does, but also it's completely unnecessary. It's very vibey.
I have a question. So we're watching this and Han says something and I need your brain, Joey, to help me untangle the time web that we're in. No. Han says he's never been east of the Atlantic in this movie. Is that canonically true?
East of the Atlantic.
Because we're to assume that this
is... No, because if Better Luck Tomorrow is truly a prequel, he went to high school in California. Wait, hold on.
He said he's never been east. He's never east gone that Atlantic. Way. Yeah.
Europe, Africa, Asia, right?
Yeah.
So we know that he grew up in California, went to high school. He then goes down to the Dominican Republic, I guess, flies in from California. And then at the beginning of Fast and Furious, he says they're doing some crazy stuff in Tokyo.
Yes.
Goes over there and then comes back for Fast 5. So, yeah. Canonically, it holds up. It holds water.
Interesting. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't, because this is firmly, this should be the first time we ever see Han ourselves, correct? As fans. Yes.
Correct.
Okay, so then it does make sense.
In timeline order, it would be... Oh, boy. It would be
That's
Better
what I'm
Luck
trying to
Tomorrow,
say.
Los Bandoleros, Fast and Furious, Fast 5, Fast and Furious 6.
Before the end credit scene.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Drift,
and then also the scenes from F9 and Fast 10 and whatever they flashback.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Totally normal.
That makes
totally
sense.
Totally easy to track. I don't know if either of you guys know, there is a low-budget, I think straight-to-DVD movie from like 1997 or 1998 called RPM, which is not good. We watched it as a patron and was like, you guys need to see this piece of shit. but in that movie is about these guys have invented a car that does not use gasoline.
Uh-huh.
And this oil tycoon's like, we got to destroy that car because I'm going to lose all my money if this is true. And in this Los Bandoleros, which is the first time we've seen it since we saw RPM, they're like, there was a car that didn't take gas, but they took it away. It's just like, yeah, same thing, right? There's always
it's
this
RPM, yeah.
It's RPM. RPM is canonically a Fast and Furious property, I guess.
That movie's really wild. If you guys get a minute, it's really fun.
I think it's on YouTube.
It feels like a Fast and the Furious movie, and then also absolutely does not at the same time.
They also use engine grease as lubricant for sexual intercourse.
Oh! I don't know about that one, boys.
They're clothed. They're clothed during it.
Politics about like gasoline for a film in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2009, we know that something's up. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like it's a mystery of the link between gasoline. And like Vin is very much just like, we got like gasoline is life. It's just that we can't have anything without. It's just like, it's like, I don't know, man. I get what you're going for there, but the metaphor feels a little bit dated. Like,
yeah,
you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Also, it's like very much like, can you see through my veil? And it's like, yes. Yeah, it's right there. Yeah, we can definitely guess what you're trying to tell us here.
Yeah. I will say I'm very excited to break this down minute by minute. We're going to do all of Tokyo Drift first, which is going to take us years. And then we're going to do this, but we're getting there. And I'm excited to do this because I don't really know this one nearly as well as I know
No, not at all. Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Do either of you have any more thoughts about Los Bandoleros before we pivot over toward Fast and Furious?
No.
Yeah.
You?
I do not.
Are you glad you saw it?
Yeah,
I suppose. Okay.
Fun. It's like
that's all that matters.
Like again, like as like a Star Wars fan, there's a lot of stuff that happens in Star Wars that's just like, this did not need to be in a movie. I'm glad it was in a comic book. I enjoyed the comic book. I don't think I'm gonna read it again too much, but I'm glad I learned what that was. And like, so I think that was this kind of moment.
Makes sense. Fair. Yeah.
Well, then let's dive into Fast and Furious number 4, which again was released on this day, April 3rd, 2009. And right away, one of my most 80s moments is Han's got this beautiful feathered hair in this opening sequence.
Oh.
I'm just like, that's pretty 80s. Like, I don't think there's a ton about this movie that is very 80s, but like very early on, I'm like, that hair belongs in the 80s in the most beautiful, perfect way.
I wrote down Han looks particularly sexy.
Mm.
So, yes. Absolutely. 80s really, really hit.
Did you guys have 80s picks?
My 80s pick is extremely volatile camera filters based on whether they are in Mexico or are in the cop room. Because in the cop room, it feels like it's almost like shot with like a television camera where it feels like in Mexico, they really just do the like, oh, total sepia filter, nothing I can do about it. Like, it just felt very much like it's the only, like there is a distinct visual language of film. And I think that this film does perhaps rely on some of the more prosaic versions of that. But yeah, that's definitely the 80s stuff.
I got one.
What's yours, bud?
What you looking at, nutsack?
that's partially part of mine. That's a great one. One of my biggest ones was just Dwight as a character.
Mm.
His like zebra print couch in his apartment, his cowboy outfit. The nutsack quote, obviously.
Dwight, I know that we'll get to Dwight eventually, but I feel like Dwight is the only character that I watched his entire arc happen on screen, and I was like, yeah, that guy voted for Trump. Like, a lot of these, there's always like other like parts of their character that are just like, well, I don't know. It's because he's like the machismo could be, but it's just like, oh no, yeah, Dwight, yeah, no, absolutely. Like,
yeah, Dwight definitely likes QAnon.
Yes, Dwight is the most into QAnon of anyone that I've ever seen on screen. Anyway, I'm glad that you brought up Dwight.
It's always amazing to me that there is someone in this franchise who canonically is a foot guy. Like, it's just that there's so much. He's also got a beautiful Xbox 360 in that room that I was noticing time. Like, his apartment is wild, and I don't understand it. I don't know if it's there to be funny. I guess it is, but Dwight is quite special.
With the deep state, they did set him up with that meth. I don't know.
He's right, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I think he's a fascinating character. I'm actually shocked that we haven't seen more of him. He's a great bit, though.
I really like Dwight. He's like a voice actor on some, like, cartoons or something, right, Joey? Didn't we find that out? He did, like, voice acting on cartoons.
Oh,
I think so.
What
else is he in? It was just, like, some random-ass, like, Ninja Turtles voice acting or something.
Oh, yeah. I think he's a big Turtles guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just think Dwight is your 80s pick?
Now that Kim said that, yes, but I had two other more lower ones. One, the Buick Grand National that Dom drives in the beginning is like such an 80s car with it just being so like flat and boxy. And for some reason, the Campos is Braga is hired a guy that to play Campos to play Braga when Campos is Braga. Mm-hmm. Storytelling trope feels very 80s. I don't know if that is actually 80s, but the that whole cycle of the like heel turn is the heel turn, but then there's also an actor playing him. For some reason, that felt 80s to me too.
My pick, not just the hair. The hair, I think, is up there. Dom getting a call on a payphone in Mexico is a big one, or Dominican Republic, wherever he is, in when he, you know, when Letty, he finds out Letty's been murdered. But in the street race, I don't know if I've heard, we probably have talked about it, but one of the racers calls somebody Ghetto Smurf, which is a shout out to Gone in 60.
Yes.
But that racer calls back to the other guy, he calls him Chia Pet. And like Chia Pet, I don't know if that's 90s or 80s, but that's definitely...
It feels 80s, I think.
Yeah. So I was like, the name Chia Pet referencing a thing, maybe talking about hair, I guess, but Chia Pet, just the vibe of Chia Pet feels...
That's good. That's a good pull.
80s
time. Very good one. I like that. Excellent.
Dated for 2009, certainly, yeah.
So, Walt, take it away. What do you want to talk about? A thing that you loved, hated, forgot about, were surprised by? Overall, did you like this movie? Where's it? Give us your rankings, but compared to, it's a different kind of movie than the first two. What do you think of Fast and Furious this time around?
So I'll tell you, there's a vibe shift that happened that like I've never thought about before. I saw this movie that I think makes a lot of sense. We're getting to the part where they go from being thieves to people who do spies, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think a thing that's really interesting is that, like, I write about this in my book a little bit, and it's just like, heist movies are awesome because heist movies require directors to do something that is directly counter to human nature, which is, like, the first thing that we learn as children is, like, don't steal, share, be nice, to preserve stuff.
Yep.
Like, respect for property is a very early, and I would argue fairly universal value. There's nothing fundamentally American, Western, anything like that. Don't steal other people's shit is an important thing. And so for when you do a heist movie, your challenge is how do you make it so that you're understood to be the good guy? So you have to, heist movies are all about, it's a reflection of society, that something is wrong in the structure of society, and the only way to subvert that is through a heist, right? And so we'll get to a lot of this more, I think, next time that we chat, but like I've always kind of understood like there's a difference between like an action movie and like a heist movie where they're thieves. What this movie does is it, like, I think it does something really interesting where I thought when I was watching it that there's such a huge difference between following a movie about a person who's currently a criminal versus following a movie where somebody's a fugitive. And movies where somebody's a fugitive is such a more interesting vibe. Because then, like, you know, they did some things bad, perhaps, yeah, but that's in their past. They're just a guy trying to get by, and the heat's on them, and they can't stay too long. And like, fugitives, I think, are far more interesting characters than criminals, and arguably even like reformed criminals, and arguably absolutely cops, because fugitives, there's always like a baseline level of temperature in every single scene, because this could be the scene where they get got in any given movie. And so I don't know, I think I'm just like, there aren't a lot of movies about fugitives. I think I just like, I saw the movie The Fugitive starring Harris. I saw it like on cable recently, like when I was just in a bar or something, and like I was like, man, that's a good movie. But like I think I've like been turned on again to like, man, fugitives are really good characters, because, and this is like the fugitive movie, like this is the like, okay, Vin's on the run, man. Like he's sticking his neck out for this. He's getting his revenge and that kind of stuff. But he's like very close to the police, and he's very close to the people who want to hurt him. And like at any moment he could get got. And obviously in this film, like they'd make the interesting choice of like, yeah, no, he gets captured. But like I just like, I love the energy that brought to this movie that I think was lacking fundamentally in the earlier movies, because those you're just trying to make sense of who this guy is. And then are also lacking in later movies, where I think the threat from the government is a little bit less real, where it's more just like, okay, great, yeah, you have an international spy occasionally on the radar, cool. But like this movie, just like it was the movie that there felt like there was a genuine baseline threat at all times. And I think that was a super delightful experience.
And then compare that to Brian, who is just, I'm a cop again.
Yeah, which we need to talk a little bit about that.
Please. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Brian just being a cop again?
I don't don't know if that's how, like, who is he working for? Is that the FBI?
It's the DOJ.
It's DOJ?
Yeah.
Why would they hire him? That seems like a terrible idea.
Well, like, so let's, can we go through all the, like, what really bad things has Brian done
Yes.
so
A
far?
lot.
He lets his mark go. That's the first thing. And the
He
second.
also was, canoodling with his Mark's sister as well on the job.
That could have been, I mean, that there's I'm sure there's worse things he could have done
Yeah.
in the compared with his colleagues over there. Okay, so then you get to the second film where he, okay, it gets worse, I suppose, in the
I think it gets a
in
lot
Too
worse.
Fast, Too Furious.
But isn't everything in Too Fast excused because he is doing it for the cops?
Stealing the money at the end, I mean.
Well,
He did steal the money in the, like, with Mr. Tyrese Gibson. They had a good
Yeah.
time.
I don't know. I don't think it's
They
enough to
wanted to
get
open a garage, you know?
he should be working for the FBI, I guess is what I'm saying.
He
Like
got like
here's
a super promotion, right? Like this is crazy to think about. Like they're like, okay, like ultimate failing upwards.
Yeah. Anyway,
You would think, like, usually the movie trope would be you'd put him in some secret organization, kind of secret cops. Like, we get secret cops later.
Yeah, or like we're the cops that have nothing left to loot, and like that. But like it's just the FBI. I don't know. The thing that this movie made a really good decision of, which is that like, is it the movie where it's just like, yeah, like Border Patrol, we just got to get it past those schmucks, and in terms of like working through the different mechanisms of law enforcement that you can be like against, they do hit a good one where it's just like, yeah, we'll just get under Border Patrol's eyes. That's fine. Like the conceit is clever of just like, okay, well the GPS thing is dynamic. I think it's a fun movie. I think it's interesting.
Kim, what do you think of this movie overall?
I feel like this movie is a little bit like ahead of its time, not in terms of like innovation and storytelling, but in terms of like this was early for like a narco movie
Yeah.
with drug smuggling over the border and all that stuff. I feel like that got really, really, really hot. There were so many series about this like after 2015, right? And this is, it gets into that whole culture. The trafficking tunnel stuff was, again, like late 2010s kind of vibes. But of course, like, I mean, this movie feels so much more serious than I think every single one
Yeah.
of the other ones, right? And
Yeah.
by a lot. The thing that I didn't remember was that Phoenix's death is like it's possibly the most like visceral murder
Yeah,
commit.
it's straight up like cold-blooded revenge.
Yeah, it's that. I mean, when The Rock kills when Hobbs does that at the end of Fast Five, like it's a bullet to the head. Like that's it. The cold-blooded murder of car into other car to
Yeah.
cut this man into is it's I mean it's different. It's different. It's not on tone for the rest of the series. Usually it's just a bullet or an explosion or something, whatever it is.
Well, I think it's that, and I think this movie is typically one of the three consensus least liked movies in the franchise because I think people are just like it's kind of dark and mean and weird and like it's not totally fun like the next movie or like lighthearted like the previous three movies. Like there is something that they are consciously doing differently here that people are like it gets them on the right path, but this is a strange tone.
It's also, they add a lot of stuff to it. Like, so I was wondering when I was watching it, like, was there a contract dispute? Did she have to film Avatar? Like, why did they kill Letty that quickly and that weirdly and then off screen?
I don't think she knew. Like, I on it, like, as the actress, like, I think that they were just like, didn't bring her back.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
It's weird.
because later, I mean, spoilies, but later, Michelle Rodriguez says that she didn't know that she was going to be in six until the post-credit scene of five rolled while she was watching it in a theater.
Oh God.
So they just like hard launched her at the end of five, and then she was like, oh, guess I'm back.
Yeah, like her displeasure with this franchise has been no secret throughout most of the franchise. Like she's like, I don't like that they give me nothing to do. They just kill me off, they bring me back. I don't know what's going on. If they're not gonna give me more to do, I'm gonna leave these movies. Like, it's not great.
It did feel like they introduced Jordana Brewster to kind of do like a reset of girl protagonist of Fast and Furious,
Yeah.
which I thought was interesting. So how much do you guys know about the actual like history of how this movie got made and funded? Like the original origin of this film?
We talked about it at one point, but I don't remember any of it now.
Yeah. So originally the National Institutes of Health wanted to see what would happen if you had a relationship emerge with the least amount of chemistry. And so it originally started as like Brian and Mia Toretto. And then they decided like, well, we want to do a very large exposure to it. And so they said, well, we have to chain it to an existing franchise. Mm-hmm. And so they blew the dust off Fast and Furious. And obviously the rest is history.
And here we are.
But it was actually just trying to figure out how the fuck you could bore somebody so much with a romance on screen if there's a baseline level of interest. Turns out there's not. So yeah, it's kind of fun.
A peek behind the curtain before we started recording, Walt's like, I took a lot of notes. I left those notes behind. And then when you said that, I'm like, this must have really stuck with you. If something pertained through the notes you've left behind to like remember the funding, and then I was just like, oh, you got me.
Yeah,
you don't like the diner scene? Are you the bad guy pretending to be the good guy, just not hitting at all?
We're gonna get there.
What I think is funny about while we're talking about Brian is that this franchise, all these movies, like all of Too Fast has been watching it, like they love to show our heroes like cut up and bruised up and like look what they've gone through. Brian literally dives through a window to tackle a guy and doesn't have a scratch on him. I'm like, why do you not like give him like a cut cheek, like a cut forehead or something? But he dives through a window to tackle a guy off a fire escape to get the name David Park. And he shows up to work, and the only thing out of place is he's got like a loose tie. It's just like, that you dove through glass.
He did level up though. Brian has finally leveled up to the point where he can effectively parkour. And there's there's a lot of parkour. Dom's not there yet. He gets there.
He's a level four fighter.
Famously gets there to that parkouring level. But no, I mean Brian's parkouring like crazy.
Well, I think this is the time. Walt, what is your most D&D moment? If Kim's using the phrase level up over here, what is your most D&D moment for this movie?
My most D&D moment is when Brian rolls a successful insight check on the guy who is not, in fact, the bad guy.
Okay.
Not even here. It's just like, that's a classic situation where like you're playing D&D and you're like, hey, wait a minute. This doesn't seem totally right. I'm going to roll insight check. And you get good enough where it's just like, that's not him. It's just like, oh. But so that's the most D&D part. The other D&D part is that this does feel like a D&D game that was like resurrected, where it's like, okay, we did a side game where we went to, you know, Miami and we rolled a new character there. And clearly like, okay, everyone's schedules kind of aligned this time. So we're going to get Dom back. We're going to get Letty back. We're going to get Brian here. Tej, he can't work today. He's working the late shift. And so he's gone home. It's also got the flavor of like somebody who's just like, yeah, I actually want to roll a new character. I don't really like Letty. I think I have this idea for a new, like, you know, kind of a like a cleric type, like a healer. Her name's she's played by Jordana Brewster. She's actually she's the sister of the main. I'm just gonna get rid of this character. You can just kill her off. It's okay. I'm not gonna come back to her. It's very much like somebody did not want to commit hard to the character that they originally built. But yeah, very D&D film, just because of how slapdash and like disorganized and clearly just like availability based a lot of the decisions were made when it comes to who's in it. So yeah,
for sure. And then Kim, not to be outdone, do you have a wrestling moment of the movie?
I do. I mean, there's a lot of turns in this movie, right? Like
truly.
But like, I think at this point, it's still in Too Fast, Too Furious. Brian is such an obvious protagonist, right? He's the face. He's the good guy all the time. There's still that. They bring back that tension in four, between him and Dom, and he's a cop, and he still doesn't like that he's a cop at the very beginning, and he slowly, you know, goes over. In wrestling, that's called a tweener. Someone that you still like, kind of like, but is doing a few bad things. Yeah, doing some bad things, but like some good things. Yeah. And so they're not like necessarily a face or a heel. You get a little tinge of that with Brian. But the one I was trying to follow throughout that whole movie is Giselle. Mm. So she starts as a heel, but like kind of not really. Like she's nice to him the whole time.
Ooh, okay.
It develops a decent amount through three or four scenes throughout the movie until he saves her life. And then she, what's the line? The line is, you saved my life. Now I'm willing to return the favor. And that's her full face turn at the end. And then she one day joins the crew, right? So that's a big face turn that they really spent time developing. throughout the movie. And I think they did it in a way that they should do more in actual pro wrestling, where it's very rare that like the good guy saves the bad guy and the bad guy's like, oh, well, maybe I should change my ways.
That's a good point. I don't think that, I don't ever remember that happening during the wrestling that I was watching. Yeah,
No,
it never goes that way. It's always like the good, he turns bad, or the bad guys turn the good guy bad. Not
yeah,
that you like
exactly. The
the
bad
other
guys
way.
indoctrinate the good guy, and then he's now he's now he's now he's bad. But yeah, no, I think they did a good job with that in this.
I am enjoying how easy it is to find D&D and I think you wrestling moments within these different things, because it really is just like it's the same exact kind of style of storytelling. Like, soaps have this, like it's
Yeah.
sequential and building and improvisational almost in a way that no other franchise does this. And at least doesn't like choose to do this. Like, this is just like the modus operandi of this entire franchise, and I just like it a lot.
I think it's why it resonates so hard with like the common folk, right? Like you have like all of the structure of how we've been told these kinds of stories. Like if you can relate it to D&D and you can relate it to wrestling, like you have the building blocks already there that you're like, oh yeah, this is somehow comforting, right?
Yeah, they really can go anywhere too, which is I think kind of always been the fun. Like even before they went to space, people were like, "Oh, what's going next?" They go to space, and like it's just like I think that there's a potential of just like this adventure style storytelling that other folks kind of limit themselves to. We always knew there were only going to be three new Star Wars movies in that like three in the new franchise, right? And so like it's somewhat limiting in scope of what one can accomplish over the course of that. Whereas these just like really does feel like we've been talking about this a bunch. Like this is a weird moment for Fast and Furious. These things could go on for another 20 movies. They could end with the next. Like it's just like it's interesting.
I think what's also funny is that as you guys are noticing these things, like, drawing parallels to the things that you're passionate about, when Joe and I watch other movies, we're like, this is so Fast and Furious. It's just like, you're like, look at these things in the Fast and Furious. We're like, look at this Fast and Furious and these other things. So I don't know that I ever knew that Stasiak's first name was Michael.
I think that's 100% the first time they address him as Michael Stasiak.
It's Michael Stasiak. I'm like, okay.
I always forget that he shows up to their house too, that he's like been at the Toretto's house. I always
Yeah, it's
imagine him at
weird.
like Quantico or something, right? Like
Yeah.
he feels like
Also,
that.
here's a maybe we can talk more about Brian as a cop here. So Brian goes into like this holding cell of the DOJ and is like, we gotta transfer, and then takes Mia and goes to a diner with her. And then lets her leave.
Yeah.
Is that what?
I
guess
he's a terrible
he's not
cop.
a good cop.
He's
He's
such a
not. He
bad cop.
just is has never been a
I
good
think
cop. Was you think he was like a really good
he's
cop
done a
before,
one.
and then the first movie like corrupted him to the point where he can never be a good cop again?
Dwayne
Or
Johnson was a good cop when he gets introduced in the next one. Brian has been a terrible cop.
We had that question. That was like a normal question we would ask people that would watch these movies with us.
Is
Like,
Brian a good cop or a bad cop? And then
yeah.
we're like, ooh.
He's not even like a bad guy. He's just like terrible at his job.
Right?
Isn't
Okay,
being a
thank you.
bad cop letting guys go make him a better cop than most cops? Or
He
someone to root
actively broke
for?
a man out of jail. I don't know. I don't believe, like, I think that he's.
His copness is kind of, we're done now with the.
This is that like the his like he'll his like moment of like, okay, now I'm gonna leave this life and enter into this life of crime, quote unquote, is that last moment when he's leading the jailbreak. And then, like, I don't know. I think that I love that reflects the first scene in the film. Like the first scene in the film was them kind of doing their like carjack running that play. And it is, I think it's a great set piece, to be honest. I think
It's one of the best in the whole
I
series,
really
in
do,
my
yeah.
opinion.
Even like
The
Trucker.
iguana, the whole thing, like I love it,
There's a
right?
shot where the truck's about to go downhill, and it's going to be the end. It's the third act of that particular scene, and it zooms out, and you see the road go downhill to eventually reach that turn. And I'm like, oh, the stakes are. Yeah, here we go. It's about to happen.
Yeah.
And like how it harks back stylistically to the first film and the like it's great.
When I was watching it this time, I kept feeling like when he's like, Letty, like, here, grab my hand. I'm like, this is Justin Lin trying out the tank jump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very much like he's like dipping his toe in and or like that, or he like when he gets to like the tank jump, he's like, what if we did that, but like put a lot of space in between it? And you're like, that would be kind of cool,
And he's
right?
like, wait a minute, did I just say space? Let's save that for later.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, I just think it's a good special effect. It feels like a real special effect where, like, I don't think that it's the last real special effect that they do, because I'm also not like a chauvinist when it comes to like, oh, you only have to do real special effects, no CGI. But like, most of the things in that scene felt like, oh yeah, they blew up a tanker. Like they had to get a bunch of gas to do it. Like,
Yeah.
feels like it feels very much like the egg of what the rest of the franchise is going to be, and like the starting point of what. Like, if you had to like show this franchise to somebody, I think you could get away with just starting here in some ways.
There's another shot like very near the end when they're running for the border, and it's very and there's in the desert, it's very Mad Max, and all the cars are there around them. Like, it felt like a little bit, just a tiny little bit, like the when they're on the ice with the nuclear submarine, several movies from now, with everyone chasing them, like in this big open area, except with a lot fewer guns or smaller guns, I suppose, and no submarine this time in the.
Joe has made the comparison in past episodes about Justin Lin like having like a toy box of like things like, in Tokyo Drift he's sort of, but like this is when he actually has the real toys for the first time, right? Like he makes Tokyo Drift, but here's like all the real, like the cool action figures, like the name brand. It's not the off brand Sean Boswell, whatever. But it's figuring out how the pieces go together and what you can do with them. And it makes sense in a way that like if he knows he's gonna make more of these movies, what can he get away with? What can he do well? What can his second unit guys do well? What can they believably make exciting and then really crank it up in the next? It's also just crazy how big of a jump it is from this movie to the next movie.
Yeah, it feels like it's an order of magnitude larger. Again, this movie feels important for the same way that like Australopithecus was important. Like, it's not going to be the thing that takes over the world. It's the necessary step in between like the monkey and the human. And like,
Was that premeditated, though?
I don't think so. I think that he just goes like basically like this feels like he like surveyed the wreckage before him of three different films with three different protagonists essentially, and was like, what the fuck am I gonna do with this? And like stitches it together in a somewhat cohesive way to see like, okay, does this work as like it's not even a caper. It's almost but there is some element of that to it. I don't know. I think that he starts just kind of throwing shit together and see what works, and it I think it does start working, right?
I just think it's crazy to watch this movie and then be like, to ask people if they're leaving the theater, would you believe me if I told you the next one in this franchise is going to be the best movie in the franchise? Like, to
And
watch this
there's
one.
five more after that.
It seems bananas. I do think, like, again, good. The thing that is like a little lacking is like I think that again, like the comic relief element does necessarily make like the revenge stuff is
Ah,
a little bit
Dwight could
heavy.
have fixed everything.
Dwight was important, but I also think that again, like in the next one, we do return two characters from the second film, and like it is a good film. It's just definitely figuring out like what is going to be so magical very shortly, you know?
You're absolutely right. I don't think Dwight is a big enough stand-in for Tej or Roman,
I
and
100%. Not even
bringing them
close.
together like really. I think that actually might, now that I'm like, now that we're talking through it, that might be what is the giant tonal shift. Like, not only is it darker, but them just cutting both of like all at this point comic relief out of the film makes it feel really, really like heavy and like there's gravity to it. And if
Yeah.
like, because if you had Tyrese in this would be a completely different movie.
Completely. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I don't know. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Really, this is like the teardown before they build the magnificent thing that they want to, but it's good. I do dig like this is the first movie that actually kind of like, and I think it's their only opportunity to so far, but like there is like a little bit of a like the relationship between like Brian and Dominic actually developing in a little bit, and like you have that like the classic wrestling moves of like enemies become friends and things like that. And like this really does feel like the movie where they start clicking in a way. Even in the beginning, we were talking about like Brian is chasing some criminal down a hallway. There's the meme that's just like everything I see reminds me of him. And it's just like you're chasing down a bald guy in a wife beater who's got some sort of long necklace with religious iconography on it, and like, man, you just every I just need that chase again, you know? And so you can tell that they're yearning for each other even if they don't say it, and I just like that.
I never made the connection that the guy that he's chasing to get, what's it, Brian Clark's
He's
name,
like
kind of
Dominic
looks
Toretto's
like
stuntman. I don't know.
he kind of looks like Vin Diesel. I never even thought about that. Wow.
Everything I see reminds me of him.
I mean, can you blame him?
especially with like action movies, like that is like, you know, that's how people express feelings in these movies, right? Like, you know, you don't need, like him crashing a car to kill a guy is like, you know, you could have a scene, but like when the emotions get too high, one must resort to blows, right? And like, you know, that's the like this is a format in a lot of different movies, like the classic thing about like Disney like musicals or just musicals in general is that like, you know, you talk until you feel so emotionally compelled that you must sing, and then when you feel so emotionally compelled during the song, then you dance and that kind of thing. Like that is with Cars in this, right? Like you speak until you are so emotionally compelled that you must race, and then once you are too emotionally compelled when you race, that is when you fight. And like that is, I think, like what these movies are built somewhat like that, and it's very kind of fun to watch.
In watching this, I was trying to figure out exactly why this one feels like smaller than the others, inclusive of like the first two, right? And there's the and it's so it's not
You think
like,
this feels smaller than the first two?
Here's why. I think the stakes are higher, of course, in this one. But in the first two, because they're like in cities the whole time, and Miami has its own culture, LA has some culture. They're in LA just, for in parts of this, but like it happens in Juarez, half of this movie, or they're just out in the country somewhere doing something. Like once we get to the next few movies that happen in places like Rio, and then you do the whole, world tour thing going through from Abu Dhabi to Tokyo and wherever else. Like that's that you get such bigness from like population and people and the whatever the culture is around there. Here you get a little bit in the Dominican Republic, and then you get Juarez and smatterings of LA.
And because we've already been in LA, it's not like exciting and new, right? It's like we were here for the first movie.
I also like they do even shout out more fun cities than the one in which they're currently hanging out in, where it's just like, yeah, you know, Rio's supposed to be nice this time of year, and I don't even know if that was planned. Like, and like he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go check out Tokyo, and like they're like alluding to plot threads that eventually they will pick up, but at the very least, it's like a lot of the movie is just kind of spent in like dusty wilderness, and like the extras budget must have been an order of magnitude less for this one compared to the first two films, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, you're right. There is just like less characters, less extras for sure.
Still pretty good. I don't know. I was
I
up
thought
on it.
I was better than I thought it was going to be
Yeah.
again this time. I think every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, I guess it's not that bad.
100%, Kim, I'm with you. This was when we first started this. I said to Joey, this is the movie I most dread rewatching every lap, and it grows on you. It really does. I think that we hold a special place for it because we know the gravity that it holds for the franchise. Like, this works to build what we get to that we love. And so, like, that plays a big part in it, too.
Yeah, this feels like a necessary like reshuffling of the pieces to get to where we need to go.
It's pretty much a reboot in a lot of ways.
Well, like the tagline for this movie literally is new model, original parts. So like, hey, we're basically redoing the first movie. Like we are coming back. We have the four people, kind of the four. I mean, one's gonna die. Don't worry about that. But like the three main people from the first movie are back, and don't worry, we're not gonna go to Miami.
The
We're not
one
gonna
guy
go
that
to
you liked, we added him too for a minute, and we're just gonna see how this goes.
Yep.
That's pretty good. I don't know. That's a pretty good campaign. I think that, because again, like it really does feel like this franchise kind of lost its way, and now this is it, like finding its core again, you know?
Walt, do you have a parallel for this in any other like film series, or is this one of a kind?
That is like one reason that I wanted to. We talked a little bit about this, but like, there's truly nothing like this. There's nothing like being built in the air quite as much as the Fast and Furious franchise is. Except again, like, you know, things that are very like adventure, like, you know, wrestling, soap operas, things like that. Like, they don't know what the plot's going to be in, you know, 6 months. They have some ideas, but they're just going to see what the chemistry between these folks are, add some people, drop some people, change some stuff up. It's like genuinely just kind of a style of storytelling that, like, you know, not even Marvel does. Like, Marvel has their stuff very figured out. They're not really like figuring out chemistry along the way, right? It's very interesting to just kind of watch, like, you know, there's clearly something that draws people to these people and these characters and these stories, and like there's just nobody else really doing it in the fly by the seat of your pants way that I think is as compelling as these guys are, you know?
Well, there was we've mentioned before that we were watching Icons on Earth. We finished the season on this franchise, but it was either after like it might have been after this one, but I think it was maybe after five, where they were finally like, oh, we should maybe start planning for where we're going and not just write these one at a time. Like, they're five movies in, or even maybe six movies in. They're like, we should probably like plan for the future. It's like, yeah. How do you not know? Like, you're a franchise by now.
Yeah. Like, this movie doesn't feel like it, like, very much leaves it very open. I think that they kind of have a sense that they have something special here and they're going to get a fifth. But, like, I don't know genuinely, like, how much they knew that they were going to get it. Like, the ending, I think, is, like, could, like, if this was the last movie, that could be a good ending, right? Like, it leaves open for what comes next. But I don't know. I really dug this in a way that it just, there's truly nothing like this movie in other franchises, to my knowledge. Like, I think Days of Future Past maybe kind of tried it, but, like, that was just, you know, that was far more corporate than this feels, you know?
I think this movie also, so actually, going back to what we started this episode talking about with Los Bandoleros, like, this almost feels like it could have been or should have been its own 20-minute thing, where it's like, this is how we get to, this is how we need to get to Fast Five with Dom captured, and they need to break him out. In a way, right? Like, it could be like a 20-minute thing, but then we get Fast Five.
Yeah, but they could have given him 30 minutes, and we could have gotten to the end of that one and been like, he's captured, and we see them pull up.
But then also to see the end of this movie, like we talked about when we talked about Too Fast, where that movie just ends, they walk off, there's no credit scene, whatever. And then here you're like, oh, they're doing a thing. Like, I need to see the next movie. That's exciting.
This was a provocative question of like, is there anything else like this? And I think that the closest that I have, and I'll think on this more, and I might watch more of these, more of the films that I'm going to refer to see if I can crack this. I think the closest thing is Godzilla. Godzilla is like canon, right? Of like, okay, here's this timeline of Godzilla. Kind of hops all over the map. It's made up on the spot. They just wanted to like make some cool monster movies that obviously became very popular. But like the thing that always motivated the franchise is that everyone thinks that this is really cool. Like everyone thinks that what we're seeing on the screen is like,
that's a big lizard.
It's a really big lizard. It's destroying stuff. It's interesting to watch. It's got friends. It's got enemies. It's got friends that become enemies. It's got all sorts of cool stuff. And like they're clearly flying by the seat of their pants. They're clearly trying to not like tell a great arc of a story that they have planned out when they, you know, first make the Godzilla movies or introduce Mothra. But clearly they're like, oh yeah, let's bring them back. They'll like that. Or like it's, oh, he's got a son now, or oh, we should kind of do a soft reboot, but it's still Godzilla. He's still gonna come from the ocean. He's you know the story, right? It's not that important for this. But like it feels very Godzilla, where like genuinely the kinetic energy that you see on the screen is gonna bring the people back regardless of what kind of scene setting you need to do around it.
Here's a question. I've seen all the movies, but I don't have the history. I've only seen most of them once. It feels like this is also kind of James Bondy, at least pre-Daniel Craig, where it's like the next movie is going to be like the same guy, but like, you know, it's a different story and like, whatever. And then all of a sudden when Daniel Craig movies come out in the era of we are building a serious, somber franchise where like things have stakes. It's like, well, we need to connect the tissue. But like there was like, you know, 50 years or 40 whatever years of James Bond movies are just like, I don't know, we'll figure out the next one when we write it. Like, I don't need to, it doesn't, whatever.
Yeah. And like the thing that makes that similar is I think like, there's a secret auteur of the James Bond movies, and that's the Broccoli family. Like the Broccoli family controls James Bond, and like they get to pick the directors, they get sign off and everything, but they're the custodians of Bond, the character. And I think much the same way that like kind of moving forward, Vin is kind of the custodian of this stuff. Like he does get EP, he does get sign off. Like he's not directing the movies, he's hiring the directors in many different ways, and he's integral to the casting and all that. But like that's another franchise where you do have kind of like a steady creative hand on the till, even if they're not directly involved in every single element of it, you know? And that's a good comparison. I like that.
Yeah.
But I also feel like James Bond, though, is a little bit like, they feel like standalones. Like, they're not, like, necessarily, like, arcs.
Daniel and, Craig like, ones, because...
Except those ones. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, but pre-Daniel Craig, it feels like every one of these can be seen in a vacuum, which Fast and Furious can, too, but they're not, like, ever building
well, it could
for the
be
next
until
one.
The end of this movie. Like you can watch any of the first four and as your first one. Like we talked about that a lot, right? Like where can you what can be your first movie? These first four, like each kind of stand on their own.
I think Five might have been my first one.
Five was my first one.
I think I felt fine about that. Because they do like, you know, you get all the gist of what you need to know in it. It's after that, like once it like genuinely once it becomes more about like the most important F in this franchise, which is not Fast and not Furious, but family. Once it becomes more about that, then you kind of need to know some of the Kim, don't shake your head. You would have done it too.
I would have done
if
it.
If you have thought
I'm
of
just
it,
jealous,
you
okay?
You would have said that in a
Well, there is a very weird line in this movie where, like, when Dom and Brian are fighting, when Dom calls Brian's cell phone from Letty's cell phone, Brian says to Dom, Letty was my friend, too. It's like, friend is the wrong word here. Like, I know that, like, they have not really fully embraced the other F word, but, like, she and Dom were not friends. They were married. We don't know that, but they were married. And friend is not what it was.
They'll get there. They'll get there.
They'll get there.
How long did they know each other? Just Brian and Letty. Just the two of them.
Minutes. Like, minutes. Because he leaves, and then he's in Miami. So, like, he knew Letty for, like, minutes, right?
Well, I think she must reach out to him, like, we need to get Dom back in America. Like, that's the point, right? Like, she's like, I want to clear his name. And the only cop she knows is Brian.
But I thought that the key part of their fight where he destroys Jordana Brewster's perfectly lovely cabinet full of very fragile things, just comically so, I thought that the impetus of that fight was like, oh, you were her handler or something, right? Like,
yeah, because she called Brian. She's like, I want to clear Dom's name. I will go undercover to, like, if I do this, can you clear his name? Yeah.
And Brian now resoundingly has tons of cop power because he's he can get people off and bring in civilians to be undercover. Now he just has full range of whatever he wants to do.
So this is peak cop Brian, right?
It must be.
Yeah. Gotta be peak cop Brian.
Fairly.
This is the highest form of policeman Brian O'Connor.
Assumes. Yeah.
Well, he's never a cop again.
Yeah, so, and this is...
But he helps Hobbs, like, auxiliary... I guess, like, you know, we can kind of say they're all kind of cops when they're working for Hobbs.
Well, spies are different than cops, right?
Okay, fair. Yeah, spies. Spies is a good distinguisher.
Also, Joe, you know the difference between a cop and a criminal? One bad judgment call.
This movie does have some great one-liners. It really does.
Movie's great.
The difference between a cop and a criminal is that cops get to be exonerated after as many bad judgments as they want.
Kim, any other thoughts? Any other things you want to bring up? Any other things that you loved or hated or want to talk about with this movie?
I don't know. I feel like I'm watching, like, something wriggle up on a beach, you know? Like, oh, there's a fish, and it's like, you know what would be cool? Legs. And I'd like to get some legs. And it's real ugly and kind of gross. But man, that's going to be a real good looking tetrapod in just one more movie, man. Like, this is a liminal stage, and we got to get through it. But yeah, it holds up. I think a lot of that's because of Justin Lin, and I think that
100%.
He's a very capable director. I like his work, and I think that, like, this movie is really where I think it just kind of emerges that, oh yeah, you do need kind of a creative hand on the till that isn't just, you know, a fan of Dungeons and Dragons. Like, actually,
while the tone of the movie overall was super serious, I think they really hit something on the music in this one. Like, the music just gets better and better from this film. And I don't know how much of that has to do with, you know, the actual Don Omar song. Starting its meandering its way into this franchise right now, but yeah, no, it gets, I mean, compared to 2 and 3, I would say, and 1, oh yeah, all three of them, like
three, the soundtrack to Tokyo Drift is fire. Though I was going to give the credit for the soundtracking to Justin Lin when you said that, because like, I think that it makes that, like, you know, 1 is like kind of classic based on what it is, but like, when you hit 3, that, like, that's when we start to get into the stride of, like, Justin Lin kind of feels like somebody that's with him or on his team, if not him, is like, I got some ideas for some songs for this movie.
And oh, yeah.
Okay.
He's like, okay. I wonder if you know how they live.
Joe, do you have any notes, any other thoughts about this movie?
No, I cut all mine in as we talked, brother.
Well, then let us play this Ain't No 10-Second Race, a.k.a. Boy Do We Have a Podcast for You. This is where we go on x.com, the X app, the everything app.
It's twitter.com, by the way.
Well, yeah.
Boy, do we have a podcast for you. Come and check out our show. Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if they're ever going to set up that redirect. Probably not.
I don't think they will. I also, like... It's really, really, really funny to me, and there's no, like, polite way to put it, but it's very, very funny to me that they are trying to pretend that this is a video platform, as if, like, X Video is not necessarily taken by an existing piece of a branding property. It just feels like like so many things that are underbaked about this platform, it feels that I have one that I can kick it off.
Hold on, before we kick it off, we need to review last episode. We gotta see if you guys have points. So we have last episode, I found dates and movies at dates and movies, April 12th in 1968, Argentine American drug lord Carter Verone was born in 1973, fast talking, fast driving Roman Pierce was born. Instead of fighting, they should have just shared birthday cake together. Hashtag too fast, too furious. I said, we've got to check famousbirthdays.com to see who's more famous, but wow, what a day. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. It got one like from a sex bot, Sharon Hunter at Sharon H. I'm not going to give myself points for that. I can't do it.
Okay.
Joe, you found Polesian Christique at Guidsman. Literalmente Carter Verone de Too Fast, Too Furious. It was quote tweeting the Ferrari president, John Elkin, arrives at somewhere looking like Carter Verone. We said, Gli somigli proprio ragazzo, abbiamo un podcast per te. He looks just like him, boy, to a podcast for you. No one, not even a sex bot like that one, Joe. I am so sorry.
Damn. Burnt
Walt,
again.
You found Sky at Extreme Wisteria being laughed at, teased, made fun of for describing the artistry of Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift. And we said, not only are you right, we could not agree with you anymore. You are heard in this world. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. It got one like. That one like is from our patron, Randy Carter. So, Walt, unfortunately, no points there. And then, Kim, you found the Fresh Prince of Despair at Fridge_Pants. 13 films to get to know me. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Heat, Director's Definitive Edition. The Fast and the Furious. Too Fast, Too Furious. Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift. Fast 5. Fast and Furious 6. He skipped this movie, by the way. Fast and Furious 6. Furious 7. The Fate of the Furious. F9. Fast 10. Shrek 2 and Tangled. And we said we love Tangled and a lot of those other films. Boy, do a podcast for you and no likes. So unfortunately, no points. All right, Walt, you said you have one. Please hit us with it, please, and thank you.
It is just at Famous Birthdays today. Fast and Furious premiered on this day 15 years ago.
Okay, how do we want to respond to Famous Birthdays?
Damn straight it did. Guess who's still talking about it? Episode after episode.
These
landed the plane. We got it.
Landed it. There we go.
Damn straight it did. Guess who's still talking about it? Episode after episode. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. I'm going to say, instead of boy, do we birthday, do we have a podcast for you. This is the weirdest site in the world. It's all YouTubers and TikTokers that no one ever knows because it's all like 15-year-olds like yanking their algorithm around. But you know.
I am wondering if it's an SEO play that's going to die with the rise of AI, but that's a later problem.
Kim, you emailed me one. Please share it with us.
God. All right. This is in response to another tweet that says Dragon Ball Z's heroes learn to drive. And okay. It says, she's fast. She's furious. She's Dom Toretto's newest ally in an ongoing crisis that only drag racing and family can resolve. This fall, it's Fast and the Furious Z.
Ooh. Now, Kim, how do we want to respond to this?
Can't wait for two Z Fast, Z Furious.
That's pretty good.
Can't wait for Z Fast, Z Furious. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. Beautiful, perfect, flawless. Love it. Joe, please hit me with yours.
Mine is a tweet from Hector J. Tabora on at what the heck.
Hector?
What the heck underscore tour. Great name as well. He's replying to one take announcing that Justin Lin is being eyed to direct Spider-Man 4.
Oh, I saw this one. That's good.
Yeah. He says, this is why I hate Marvel movie fans. Comments shitting on Justin Lin when Fast and Furious 3 through 6 show stronger technical merit from him than Watts has in three films. Not to mention Star Trek Beyond was fun, and this dude can really film action sequences. As giant Justin Lin fans, we couldn't agree more, Hector. Boy, do we have a podcast for you.
I found one. I don't know if I love or not. I also found while I was looking, Justin Lin's Perfect Storm Entertainment developing biopic on World Rally Vice Champion Michel Mouton. So Justin Lin doing more car stuff.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
So yeah. Mine is from Hood Internet, which is a DJ duo, but it's also just Steve Rydell. and it's a picture of a thing that, Joe, you might have or we might have bought for Turbos for Tots or people in the Discord have, but kids today don't want Tickle Me Elmo or Beyblades or Juju Pets. They want the Toretto house from Fast and Furious.
Oh, I have one at my house, yes.
Nano scene Toretto house. And I'm going to say, no toy chest is complete without the Toretto house. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. I love the Hood Internet, though. I haven't listened to them in a while, but great mashup DJs. So shout out to Steve Rydell and Hood Internet. But also shout out to Kim and Walt. Thank you once again for joining us for another go-round of this fine, fine podcast. What would you like to plug only for the first time in like three appearances? Last time, Kim, did you start plugging your own stuff? Do you want to keep that streak up or do you want to return to no plugging? Please take it away.
I can plug. I have a story out, I think last week, about Michael Rubin, the billionaire founder of Fanatics, and how he took over the trading card industry. So if you're interested in trading cards, sports cards, all that stuff, go check it out on Bloomberg.com and Bloomberg Businessweek magazine.
Sweet. Very, very cool.
Kim just reports on everything that I think is cool at all times.
That's his. That's actually in his contract.
That's kind of my job. Yeah.
It's like, does Joe think this? They like have like a secret spy in my house. So like, does Joe think this is cool?
You should. You guys should just genuinely like brainstorm ideas.
Yeah. Give me some ideas. Always looking.
Okay. If I have any stupid ideas, I will send them to you. Well, stupid fun. Not stupid.
That sounds like a business we cover forever. Is this coming out this week or next?
Remind me. This will be out on Tuesday in 6 days.
In 6 days. Okay. Well, then I probably can't reveal a thing that's launching, but I would say check my Twitter account for a thing that is launching probably today. If you are listening to this in your earballs first.
Ooh.
My Twitter account is @WaltHickey. I have a very cool job now, and something very, very fun is about to launch. So that is my plug. That is my enigmatic plug. Also, just buy my book. I've said it before.
Just keep saying buy my book.
Buy my book. It's called You Are What You Watch. It's available wherever books are sold.
I was also looking for the thread where I email you guys to, you know, confirm the recordings or whatever, and I was just searching for Kim's last name. And I love seeing in Numlock News when something that Kim reports on gets, you know, finds its way into Numlock News. It's a nice
go-round
of just, you know, cross-promotion. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
I like my friend's stuff. He writes some good stuff. Sometimes. It's
super cool.
Good sometimes.
It's still a compliment, all right? We're good.
Joe, our next episode, our 350th on the main feed, is Jesus. Princess Bride from 1987.
That's really good.
That's wild.
What's it going to be?
Too many.
We did a special episode for 100. We maybe did a special episode for 250. We said
500 should be like the 500. Next
350 is just, it's a nice round number, but it's not. But yeah, 500 will be something in, you know, 3 years. But episode 350 next week is The Princess Bride. But you guys will be back in 3 weeks to talk about Fast Five as this franchise blows the lid off things and just gets crazy, crazy, crazy. But thank you once again for joining us. And for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/ Too Fast, Too Forever, or @ Too Fast, Too Forever on all the platforms. Email us, family@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon page at toofasttooforever.com and our store at cageclub.me/shop. And come back next week for The Princess Bride. Ooh. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And that was Walt Hickey and Kim Bassine, and we will tell you all about it
when we see you again.